You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Human trafficking involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain some type of labor or commercial sex act, and it's happening in Pennsylvania. In fact, the U.S. Route 15 corridor in central Pennsylvania, Maryland, and New York is used often by traffickers. Think about the dozen or more adult bookstores or places that have signs out front that advertise girls, girls, girls that can be found between Duncannon and Williamsport. Trafficking is a crime that is taking place much more often than one might think. It often is happening right in front of us without most people knowing. Human trafficking is the focus of today's Smart Talk. Joining us is Rhonda Hendrickson, the Vice President of Programs at the YWCA of Greater Harrisburg and coordinator with the Pennsylvania Alliance Against Trafficking in Humans Route 15 Project. Karen Galbraith, a training projects coordinator with the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape. And Tanya M. Gould, survivor leader expert and consultant and vice chair of the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Tanya Gould, let me start with you. What is the definition? What is the definition of human trafficking?
Well, I'm going to definitely put it in terms that everyone can understand. So human trafficking is when someone actually takes a person and coerces them, uses threats or promises, deceit to get them to basically sell themselves, whether it's for labor, for work, or for sex. And that person is making a profit off of them. They are exploiting this person, and they're using their vulnerabilities in order to do that. So, you know, traffickers prey on people. They look for people. It's their job. That's what they do. That's how they keep their business. They look for people who have certain types of vulnerabilities, and they use that and exploit them and use them as a resource, use them to profit off of.
In doing my research, looking at the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking, there's a lot of attention paid to slave labor or labor human trafficking. Much of what we may talk about here in Pennsylvania has to do with sex trafficking. But and part of the reason is because from the federal government standpoint, you're looking at the world. You're looking at this worldwide. When we do look across the world, when we do look across the country, are those who are in trafficking, is it more for work or more for sex?
So when we look here in the United States, we kind of take the 20-80. So in terms of sex trafficking, we would say 80% are domestic. Right. And then when in terms of labor trafficking, we look at 80% here, 20% here in the United States. And, we kind of switch that out, the 20-80. So when it comes to sex trafficking, we definitely have more happening here domestically from United States citizens. And then, you know, when it comes to labor trafficking, it's 80% that are international.
Rhonda Hendrickson, you're the Vice President of Programs at the YWCA of Greater Harrisburg and coordinator with the Pennsylvania Alliance Against Trafficking in Humans, the Route 15 Project. How widespread is human trafficking in Pennsylvania?
Well, Scott, you know, getting numbers is always problematic with human trafficking. You know, it's very much under the radar. But what we can tell you from the PATH 15 project that we implemented through Department of Justice funding back in 2014, we know that there is widespread human trafficking. And much of it is, as Tanya said, much of it is sex trafficking in Pennsylvania, although probably somewhere around 15% of our cases involve labor trafficking. And often that can be a combination of both sex and labor. We know that the greater Harrisburg area, Harrisburg, Dauphin County, Cumberland County, York County, is really a hotbed for identifying victims, both victims being transported through the state, but also really a destination spot to bring those victims and traffic them.
Why?
Why? A lot of reasons, but primarily it's easy access. Think about all the interstates that and highways and byways that are connecting right here in this Harrisburg region. We also have an airport, a bus station. So it's easy in, it's easy out. We have hotels all over the place. And Scott, I want to be clear that, you know, trafficking can happen to anyone, but many of the victims that we run into are from right here in our own communities. And they tell us, you know, through their stories that they're being taken lots of different places and moved from place to place and sold for commercial sex or labor.
Why Route 15, though? I mean, you mentioned York County. Route 15 doesn't run through York County, but we do have a lot of interstates. But why Route 15 in particular, other than what I mentioned in the introduction with all those adult bookstores, those clubs and all that?
Right. And it's a populous county. It's a large county. It intersects so easily with, you know, Dauphin County and the transportation systems. So it isn't really just necessarily about only Route 15, but everything that is surrounding and connecting those routes that run up to New York. You know, Flushing, New York has been a hotbed of trafficking, of bringing in foreign nationals. And we find those individuals down here in the Harrisburg region in hotels being trafficked. Solaire Township Police are excellent at this, and they are finding victims, especially foreign nationals associated with Chinese gangs and Chinese crime in those hotels.
And just so you know, to think about the entire United States and where someone's state may fit into human trafficking and how prevalent it is, you can always look at anywhere you find things like construction. You know, you find communities being built, sports, you know, agriculture. When you find states that have, you know, these growth opportunities, you're going to find trafficking rings.
I am curious, though, Rhonda, I met those places on Route 15 that I mentioned, those adult bookstores. And, you know, I always see a lot of vehicles out there. But the women who are working at those places, have they been trafficked?
I would say the potential for that is very high. The problem, Scott, is that many victims do not recognize the word trafficking. They do not recognize the force, fraud, and coercion that is being used to control them and manipulate them. It doesn't always involve violence, the things you see in the movies. It can be much more subtle. We see a lot of what we call romantic pimps who will masquerade as their boyfriend and get victims to believe that they love them and care for them. They just need their help with making some money. And then again, as Tanya already referenced, you know, victims' vulnerabilities are used against them, whether it's a drug addiction, mental health, or other vulnerabilities, past trauma and abuse in their life. And those are used and manipulated. So a lot of psychological coercion is used where victims just aren't recognizing that.
Karen, I want to ask you, Karen Galbraith is from the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape. Something that Rhonda said a few minutes ago, that this flies under the radar. Always get the sense that many Pennsylvanians, and this probably is true across the country, but that many Pennsylvanians think, oh, it couldn't happen here. That's something that happens. Yeah, we see it in TV. We see it in movies. We hear about it in places like New York City or, you know, bigger cities. It couldn't happen in these rural areas. Why does it fly under the radar?
Well, I think we've touched on a couple of the key points, Scott. You know, first of all, as Rhonda pointed out, you know, many survivors don't self-identify. They don't necessarily recognize their circumstances as being human trafficking, so they wouldn't define it in that way. I think there's still a lot of education that's currently being done, but still needs to be done among service providers and law enforcement and other professionals that are responding to maybe other types of situations, whether it's, you know, traffic stops or domestic violence incidences, sexual assault reports, things like that, where we're not necessarily seeing the complexity of the situation and being able to identify those situations as incidences of human trafficking, in addition to domestic violence, in addition to sexual assault, in addition to, you know, this traffic stop or you know, drug trafficking that's going on. And so it's often happening, you know, in concert with other types of crimes. And so those are the things that are identified, and human trafficking simply isn't. Another thing that I think is important to touch upon are just sort of, you know, the glamorization of trafficking and sort of what we see on television, what we see, you know, with Jeffrey Epstein and cases like that. You know, those sort of big media examples are not necessarily how trafficking is playing out within communities and within homes. You know, not all trafficking involves the transportation of a person to another location. Trafficking can happen within a person's home. There are a lot of people that are trafficked by friends and family members within their own neighborhoods, within, you know, from their homes, things that are happening on the internet. So, you know, what people commonly understand to be trafficking is sort of a limited view. And so we're not necessarily recognizing all the different ways that this can play out.
I want to read an email we received from one of our listeners. I tried to report a rural house near Route 104 that goes through up along the Susquehanna River and up toward Mifflinburg. Very clearly, if one observed the irregularities dealing in teens, Union County Children's Services said they had no authority, no cause. I witnessed unschooled white teen girls kept inside, actual van money deliveries, mattress burnings, hustle in and out, but nothing could be done. Very disappointing. The law was unable to respond. I contacted several organizations. They cleared out just in one day, just gone. Mattresses beyond belief left smoldering in the yard. You can hear the frustration in this listener's voice in this email. But the point that she brings up, Tanya, I mean, how is someone to report what they suspect as human trafficking? I mean, all she describes right there sounds like it would be very suspicious.
Yeah, and so that's what we need. We need people who believe something is happening or have suspicion to call the National Human Trafficking Hotline, which is 888-373-7888. That's 888-373-7888. And then, so what they need to do is just kind of, you know, to remember some things that they're seeing, that as to speak to why they think that this is an issue. And Polaris, the National Human Trafficking Hotline, will call the local authorities or FBI, Homeland Security. I also want to remind folks that in a rural area, a lot of times traffickers will take their stable or their family and go to rural areas just to kind of get out of the way, where the, you know, maybe they went to a big attraction in a larger city, Pennsylvania, we're talking like New York or somewhere on the East Coast, and then they'll head on out to a rural area because they know that law enforcement and people in those communities are not well educated on human trafficking and how to identify. So they can lay low for a while, but they're still going to keep their business going, right, in those areas. So that's why they were so easy. They were able to just pick up and leave, you know, at a moment's notice. Hmm.
Rhonda, now, you know, what Tanya just said about contacting the national hotline, that sounds like a great idea. But this listener contacted local authorities who said they didn't have any authority to do anything. Can local authorities, what can they do?
Right. And so, you know, a trafficking investigation is complex. And Karen, you know, hit the nail on the head. We need more education to all our professionals to really be understanding what trafficking looks like. And the reality in Pennsylvania is that we are still focusing on the individuals who are selling commercial sex and charging them under crime statutes like the prostitution statutes in Title 18. In fact, about 68% of those arrests under that statute are for selling sex versus the buyers. And we will never get any further if we can't start targeting the demand for this. And the one thing that has to happen is, you know, our law enforcement has to be really looking through a different lens at what trafficking looks like. And so when you see what looks like the, you know, the TV version of prostitution, what we know is that these are likely victims of human trafficking being coerced, being forced in some way. And whether it's, you know, violence or psychological manipulation or drug control, they are victims. And we've got to start seeing them that way.
Let's take a phone call from Sherry in Lewisburg. Sherry, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and I'm so grateful that you are covering this important topic. I actually became aware of this when my high school daughter, Katie Jacobson, and her classmate Susie Vo were selected to be part of a Rotary Leadership Academy. And through that experience, they developed a curriculum called Teach Against Trafficking to its high school students, sharing information about trafficking with other, you know, high school students, because so many students think about trafficking as that sensationalist Jeffrey Epstein type example and don't understand that people in their own high school might be being trafficked by family members or romantic partners. They developed a website called teachagainsttrafficking.org. It's filled with resources, information about consent, interviews with experts, and I'd like to recommend it to your listeners. They have also been presenting to Rotary clubs around Pennsylvania and are prepared to do presentations in high schools.
Mm. Hey, Sherry, thank you very much for calling in and let us know. And congratulations to your daughter and her friend, her classmate, because that's just what our guests have been talking about education. Thank you very much for calling in. And Karen, let me, you know, you mentioned education and you're the training projects coordinator with PCAR. How do we educate? I mean, Sherry's daughter sounds, I mean, it's great that they are getting to young people in particular, but it sounds as if education needs to be widespread on this issue. But educated in what way?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. And Sherry, I'm so glad to be able to respond to this. I think it's amazing that what your daughter and her peers are doing, because we absolutely do need to be educating people about trafficking at all levels, at all ages, in all different types of settings. And so, Scott, I think we're talking about a couple of different things here. So obviously there's education within schools, which is essential. And so we want to be making students aware of what, you know, trafficking can look like, that it is something that can be happening within their school, that it can be happening online, so that they know and families know how to help them to be safe. And so, you know, we do put a lot of focus on sort of helping to prevent victimization, but I also want to stress that it's so important for us to do prevention around perpetration as well. What can we be doing to educate kids about empathy and compassion and respect and consent and boundaries, so that people are not growing up to be engaging in trafficking from the perpetration side, or that they're not purchasing sex from other people or exploiting others for labor. And so absolutely, we want to be raising awareness in schools around, you know, the things we can be doing to keep ourselves safe, but we also want to be building those connections and that empathy and building relationships with caring, supporting people, so that we are preventing the things that can lead to perpetration as well. I think we also need to focus on educating those people who are around children. You know, we have really strong mandated reporting laws in Pennsylvania, and so we need to be educating teachers and, you know, clergy and coaches and, you know, community or youth group leaders and all those folks that are intersecting with, you know, children and teens, so that they can be helping, again, to be intervening if they're seeing some of those red flag warning signs that we've talked about, so that they can be building those nurturing relationships and setting up situations where when kids need help, they have adults they can connect with to get that help. And also so that reports can be made, you know, when there is concerning behavior going on, or when someone is suspicious that that a child is being trafficked in some way. We need to be educating, you know, professionals, so medical providers. We know that a lot of times folks who are being trafficked are seen in emergency rooms and medical clinics and things like that, because, you know, if somebody is sick, they can't be working. And so very often the one, you know, community service, so to speak, that that a victim or survivor will be intersecting with is a healthcare provider, because, you know, in cases of labor trafficking, they might have, you know, work-related injuries or something that need to be attended to in order for them to keep working. In cases of sex trafficking, if somebody has, you know, an STI or something like that, they're going to need to be treated so that they can keep working. So we know that medical providers are key to identifying and linking survivors to support. Yeah. Obviously, we've talked about the importance of educating law enforcement, not only so that they can be recognizing trafficking when they see it, when they encounter it, but also so that they can be educated about responding in trauma-informed and survivor-centered ways. Yeah. There are really important considerations when we are when we as service providers or other, you know, law enforcement agencies or whatever, when we are supporting survivors of any type of trauma, whether it be human trafficking, domestic violence, sexual assault, or other, you know, forms of trauma, we need to be sure that we're responding in a way that is going to ensure that that person is not re-traumatized or re-victimized through the process. Not only the identification, but then the very specialized ways that we need to be responding when we do recognize that something is going on. And we want to be sure that we are supporting survivors in their decision-making and recognizing that sometimes what we as those, you know, responders think might be the right best move may not be the right best move for them and may not be what's safe for them at that point. And so, you know, valuing their expertise on their situation and what is best for them at that time.
Here, let me bring, I want to bring Tanya in at this point. Go ahead, Tanya.
Hey, what I would like to do is kind of go back to when you were saying earlier about the bookstore, like going into the toy shop or sex shop, right? And so I want to kind of bring this back to, because what happens, a lot of people are so disconnected and still have this mentality that, oh my God, you know, human trafficking, that could never happen in my neighborhood, in my area, right? But I want to talk about the gateway, you know, to trafficking, which is exactly what you just said, right? When we're talking about pornography, right? And so pornography has been so normalized. It is, to me, in my opinion, is so normalized that we are seeing more and more pornographic images and, you know, instances in movies and music videos. And it's integrated into our culture. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a trafficking culture. And so, you know, we have to really broaden our perspective, but internalize, like bring it back home, like holding each other accountable in our home, because what folks try to do, they try to live out those fantasies that they're seeing and then they go and buy sex. This is a normal thing in society, and we continue to deny it and kind of not talk about it. So that's why we feel so detached to the issue, but that's why people buy sex for the most part, because this is pornography becomes an addiction, and you have to continue to feed this addiction. And so you find yourself, you know, I'm going out to find it, to make it happen. So we need to start having those types of conversations so people aren't so put off and feel like human trafficking happening somewhere else. When we look at statistics, 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 3 girls will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. That's the stats. And so these are some issues we just never dealt with. And that's why we feel so disconnected to what human trafficking is. But it's very close, because these are issues we never dealt with.
Let's bring some more context to this. Rhonda Hendrickson, how do traffickers find women, and I assume men as well, to traffic?
Right. Again, it goes back to the vulnerabilities. Traffickers make a mastery out of their art here. And I don't mean to call it an art form, but for them it is, because they've perfected the recruiting methods. They are looking to use vulnerabilities against the victim. And I will go back. We see probably at least 90-95% of our cases have a substance abuse issue attached to it. And those substance abuse issues are being used to control the victims, We've had numerous cases where victims are picked up. There was one a few years back in Harrisburg on 6th Street. It was a false church front operating. And they were sex and labor trafficking out of that sort of, let's call it storefront. And the individual we were working with had a severe, severe addiction. And that is how she got picked up, because she needed a way to supply her addiction. And when you run out of money, right, and somebody with that kind of addiction is going to run out of money to feed the addiction, that's where the trafficker comes in. And he provides it, but it's in exchange for something else that's going to benefit him or her.
I saw a statistic that is just blew my mind. It says runaways have a 1 in 3 chance of being picked up by a trafficker within 48 hours. I mean, that is incredible. When you're talking about young people who are running away are very vulnerable at that point. But within 48 hours, a 1 in 3 chance of being picked up by a trafficker. Tanya Gold, as I mentioned in the introduction, and the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking, all members are survivors. You yourself are a survivor. What happened?
You mean in my story? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I was ready to answer questions.
Yes.
And so a lot of what you're hearing, you know, having this vulnerability is I was sexually abused as a child. I was involved in child exploitative images and photographs when I was a child, and physically abused. I was very detached from the community. And so my trafficker, a person who I fell in love with before he trafficked me, saw those vulnerabilities and used them and made me feel great about myself. Where here I was in a community that could have made me feel more positively about myself and more optimistic about, you know, possible opportunities in spite of what had happened to me. They didn't do that, but my trafficker did. And he saw me, and we talk about the definitions about coercion, manipulation, and made me think that, you know, we can build a better future. But because of the demand, right, that's what we're talking about. The reason why this is happening, because there is a demand, you know, well, we have to find that supply, right? We have to be able to supply that demand. And so in order to do that, this is a way to make money, to get on top, to do it in a fast way, because why would someone like me with all my past be able to go to college or have a reputable career because of all the trauma that I had gone through? And so doing something like this, you know, in my mind at the time, you know, it didn't seem as though it would be as terrible as my past as a child. And so why not? It can't be so bad, but you know, it was terrible. It was horrific, you know, just, you know, being in those situations with different types of buyers and their different expectations and, you know, the threats and the punishment from my trafficker. And, you know, what really shocked me the most, because I was not familiar with this world at all, but all of the other people that were being trafficked as well. You know, when you're in a situation like that, you feel very hopeless and helpless because this is something that's happening. We're feeding a demand, and a demand that, in my opinion, feels very carnivorous, right? It feels like, you know, they're carnivores and they're eating on the vulnerable, and that's not okay. And that is exactly what it feels like. And so to bring awareness and to make sure that there's training there to help law enforcement understand the culture of it and how it's so embedded, but also to have enough resources to offer hope, you know, to people who have gone through, you know, things that are this horrific. And when I say horrific, and everything you ever think about, what happens out there happens, and worse, things you haven't even thought about, right? Because people are, you know, people are mean, you know, people are bad, and we do have this potential in our society, and we need to just, you know, come awake and aware to that, and begin to do things differently, to think differently, and change our culture. This is a culture change. That's what we need to do.
How are you able to get away?
I had a particular situation where we were. If anyone can watch my story. It's called In Plain Sight on Cox 11. And so at the end, I had this situation where we had to like work the track, and you never want to like try to find buyers yourself. You always want your trafficker to do that. But we were being punished, and our trafficker had us, make our own quota ourselves. And I had this buyer pick me up, and he actually kidnapped me. And so no one knew where I was. And he took me to this empty car lot with a chain link fence area, and, looked at me and told me to give him my money. And, I was going to fight for it, because if I went back to my trafficker without money, that would be big trouble for me. So anyway, I began to fight against them and tell him no, but he took out a knife and, began to fight me for it. And, at that moment, what viewers don't know, I was actually a single mom, and I had a little guy. It was, a little over a year at this time. And we had night care for kids, for people who were in our family. And so, as we're fighting in the car, I literally hear this audible voice say to me, "What are you doing? You have a son." And at that moment, in Matrix, everything like slows down. It was one of those moments when, your life passes before your eyes type of things. And so anyway, I remember that I have a son, and he's at night care, and no one knows where he is except my trafficker and everyone involved in that. And if I die tonight, my little one would be with them. And the mama bear came out. I say, okay. I give him my money, throws me out the car. And, I am angry at God, because, he knew I needed to make this money. And, at the same time, I get up and I scream God's name, and I say, "Help me, God." And I raise my hands in the air. And when I do that, police officer hears me, turns his lights on, and comes over to where I am. And I'm thinking, great, I'm about to go to jail. But he comes over to me, and he looks at me like he knew me. And he says, "What are you doing out here?" And he spoke to me. He didn't speak to the prostitute. He didn't speak to the person who was vulnerable and hopeless and helpless and homeless, or, he saw me as a person, and I felt that. And he said to me, he said, "I'll pay for you to get home. I want you to promise me that you'll never come out here." And he was just very kind, and he did that. He put me on a bus, sent me home. And if it wasn't for that officer, I know for sure I would not be here today, and definitely not as whole as I am when it comes to recovery.
Well, how did you recover, though? I mean, you went on to be a success story. I mean, you ran for the legislature in Virginia.
I did.
And I mean, you just lost, but I mean, you've gone to college, you've gotten degrees. How are you able to recover from, obviously, that was a low point?
I remember earlier I said when I was there, I couldn't believe how many people this was happening to. I couldn't believe that world. I couldn't believe that people would do this to people. And that stayed with me. And when I was on that bus and I was driving home, I had my little guy on my lap, and we're looking out the window, and I saw this big white house abandoned in the country. And I said to myself, if I had a place like that, that's what I need. I need support. I need help. I don't know how to get out of this, but I promise when I get out of this, I will help others. And that's what drove me. The love for my kids, that mama bear moment, something awakened in me that I can get out of this. It wasn't easy. I had to, get lots of counseling and support from the community. And I had lots of self-awareness and realization. I mean, it took years, but I really wanted to do everything that I can to change the world we live in as much as I can. And I just took that as a responsibility and ran with it. That's the passion that you hear.
Tanya, I'm glad you told that story because it may be a lesson for a lot of people as well. But congratulations on what you have done. We have a question from a listener wants to know, what can community members do to raise their own awareness or provide person-to-person support if they sense trafficking is going on locally, for example, at gas stations or a truck stop? Is there anything that we can do to pass along resources in the moment before calling to report suspicions? Rhonda Hendrickson, what about that?
Well, we certainly don't want anyone to put themselves in a dangerous situation, first and foremost. So if they see something happening, you know, the thing to do is call 911 and get an emergency response. But, you know, what folks can do in the community is provide education, bring in trainers like myself, my colleague in PATH 15, Steve Turner, who's a federal state and federal prosecutor in Pennsylvania, and Karen. Educate your community on what this looks like. Make sure your community knows the national human trafficking hotline number and the resources that are out there, like PATH 15, where you can refer somebody who you suspect may need help. You know, much like we tell domestic violence victims, you know, let me help you call the hotline number. There's an advocate who can help you. Our PATH 15 agencies up and down Route 15 are available 24/7. We provide training, but we also provide all those crisis services, free therapy for victims, case management, legal and immigration services, so free immigration assistance, free civil legal services. And in fact, we provide reunification assistance. We've had some foreign nationals. We've sent some, put them on planes back to China to reunify with their families. So there are resources out there. Learn what they are. Know who to refer folks to. Bring in that education to your schools, your community groups, your PTOs, you name it. Bring it in.
So, Scott, if I could jump
go ahead,
in
Karen.
Quickly. I mean, I just really want to encourage folks to get involved, not only once they've seen something or become suspicious, to get involved on that prevention side of things. And so, again, if you're a parent, you know, advocate with your school board and your kids' schools to have prevention programming brought into their classrooms. You know, talk to the community groups that you're part of to bring in prevention and education around these issues. When you see people being mistreated in your communities, if you're part of organizations that have practices that are discriminatory, or if you're noticing, you know, disparities and disproportionality happening, you know, in terms of whether that's criminal justice response, child welfare responses, those kinds of things, get involved to speak up about those things, advocate for, you know, equitable services and things like that. Because as we've talked about throughout the show today, you know, although trafficking can happen to anybody, it's more likely to happen to folks that have marginalized identities. And so we need to be doing what we can to create greater equity broadly, to educate about issues like the impact of pornography on children, on teens, on adults, what that can lead to. Again, to really target not just the prevention of victimization, but the prevention of perpetration. And again, you know, for the adults listening, you know, form those close and trusting relationships with young people, set good examples, be a good role model so that, you know, kids are recognizing what it means to be part of a safe and healthy relationship. Because, you know, as Tanya was explaining, when children don't have that, you know, they don't necessarily recognize that a trafficking situation is out of the norm, or it may even be better than what they've been experiencing within their homes if they're, you know, experiencing abuse within their home. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we are attending to those things, you know, all throughout the lifespan, and that we're not ignoring older adults, because we know that older adults can be trafficked as well. And so making sure that we are not waiting to act until we see something, but that we're acting at times when we can be part of the solution and part of the prevention side of things as well.
Tanya, what are the red flags? I mean, if we're educating even here today, what are the red flags? What should people be suspicious of when they see it?
Well, I always So we've talked a lot about red flags just in our conversations, but I always start with looking at home. I'm a mentor and I work with kids who've been identified as being trafficked. And, you know, one of the things that parents miss, they're looking so outside of themselves and outside of the communities. They, you know, forget that this can happen in your home. And so, you know, what parents can begin to look for in their own home is the use of sexual language that they know that they haven't taught their kids or had their kids exposed to, because maybe they monitor their kids and the kids somewhat. But remember, kids have internet access everywhere. They have friends who have phones, right? They have internet at school, at the library, wherever they're going, you know, Wi-Fi is accessible. And so, so they need to listen out for language that kids are using that are different. Also look for, you know, sometimes if kids are saying, well, you know, I got this gift from such and such, right? And they may name a girl name because that may not seem like to be, you know, an issue. You know, Sarah bought me this or gave me her stuff. But notice the increase of, like, you know, clothing or an extra phone. You know, where are kids getting these extra phones from? Because that's really important in trafficking situations. They have, many different types of phones. And I work with a family where the daughter had about 3 or 4 phones and the mom knew about it. She just thought it was something kids were doing. So look for new friends with different types of influence. And we see that in our kids. We're like, who is this you're hanging out with? Right? So be the parent and begin to investigate things like that. If you see a kid who's usually outgoing or they're, you know, great with their grades, and you notice as a teacher, say you're a teacher, you notice, you know, when they're with this particular person, their whole personality has changed, or they're sleeping a lot in class, or, you know, and these are just some things that are real that we see all the time and that we often hear that are happening with kids. And when we talk to parents, they're like, yeah, if I would have, you know, thought that, I just thought they were going through the teenager phase. And actually it was them being in these situations that they've never been in before, and they don't know how to ask for help. And so you see them withdraw, you know, and again, using language, having, you know, like sometimes teachers complain about kids, their behavior in school, and you know your child and you're like, why is my child acting like this? You know, why are they having, you know, are screaming at teachers and using language, you know, in school or in other places they haven't, you know, or having like outbursts, you know, or are crying, or just, you know, you see that change. Please, please begin to, you know, instead of moving away from your teenager, bring them in closer and get family therapy and get some help and ask those questions. You want to bring them in close. And so as far as outside in the community, you know, we've had folks call who, you know, they were at a park and they saw, you know, an older gentleman with younger kids, but they, you know, were dirty. Like, they didn't look like they had proper hygiene. You know, that's definitely something you should call in, you know. Or if you see a house where there's lots of folks going in and out, or, you know, maybe you only seeing men go in and out and you're in a construction area especially, but it just seems weird and seem odd. You need to call it in as a suspicion. You don't have to know and be right. You're just calling in a suspicion. And so those are, I'm sure Karen and Rhonda has more on that.
Rhonda, before we do that, I did want to ask another question because we only have about 4 minutes left. You know, Tanya mentioned online something that, you know, I understand that there have been some changes. Unfortunately, the criminals, the traffickers have adapted during the pandemic. What have you seen during the pandemic as far as trafficking?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, we definitely saw a decrease in victims being identified. We are right now, though, starting to see an uptick in that. But there was definitely a good 18-month period where, you know, first and foremost, this trafficking is under the radar to start with. And then you throw the pandemic on, and it just really exasperates the whole situation. And so we are seeing some activity right now. We're seeing a good bit of activity. Some identification going on, which is good news. We are seeing, though, some preying on children that is very active in our area. And it's very concerning. And again, this is what traffickers do. They target the vulnerable, which includes our children, especially in this case, runaways, and very, very young adults with mental health who are functioning as if they're children. So that is something that, you know, again, getting that education to parents so that they know what to look for, because kids do not understand what's happening for them, to them. And when they're scared, I think Tanya said it really well, they just don't know how to reach out for that help.
Well, Tanya, I want to follow up on something. You know, you were describing and you were talking a lot about what parents should recognize, but you also did mention that when you're out in public, but let's face it, a lot of these kids who are vulnerable, kids or adults who are vulnerable, may not be in the home, may not have parental support, may not have a guardian looking over them. And a lot of things you described with change in mood and language and that kind of thing sound like a lot of the characteristics of a child who's been abused in some other way. So there's a lot to take in there. And I have to tell you, I only have about 2 minutes.
Yeah, but, you know, think about it. A lot of this is, you know, they intersect. And so most kids that we see, whether it's detention center, behavioral health, you know, they disclose previous sexual abuse or this type of sexual exploitation. And so these are things that, you know, families traffic their kids. You know, these are real stories that happen today. And so, you're a neighbor, you can notice things, you know, where you see people coming in and out the house that aren't family, or there are different types of people, you know, or, you know, there's a lot of drug activity in the area where you see, you know, a lot of kids hanging out at a certain person's house. There's gun trafficking, drug trafficking happening there. And so anytime you as a citizen see something that's okay. So for an example, this is what I usually tell people. Because we've seen enough movies, we know what it looks like when we think we're seeing a drug transaction, because it's in like a weird parking lot. Like, it just feels weird. Same thing. When you have that feeling, call in that suspicion. You may not know all the red flags or the signs, but you know that something is wrong here. Call it in, because it really can save someone's life. Like, that's the truth. It really can save someone.
I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. I mean, obviously a very important topic. And Karen Galbraith, I gave you the last word. You know, earlier, Tanya had that national hotline. For someone who may want to report this, what do you do? And I have to say, I have like 20 seconds.
Again, if it's an emergency situation, we encourage you to call 911 if you see someone being harmed. And the Human Trafficking Hotline is an excellent resource at 888- 373-7888.
I want to thank all three of our guests, Rhonda Hedrickson, who is with the Pennsylvania Alliance Against Trafficking in Humans, Route 15 Project, Karen Galbraith of the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape, and Tanya Gould, who is an expert and consultant and vice chair of the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking. Thank you very much for being with us today. I'm Scott Lamar. Enjoy the rest of your day.